Great. Well, welcome back to anyone who's been on holiday. It's great to see you all and excited about all God is going to do. 1st of September, craziness begins. So we're going to be starting a new series, which we're not going to have because we've already moved around graphics and stuff. But there is a graphic for which from next week you'll see, and I think was on the e-news if you get the e-news, on the church, and it's called For Her He Died. And really excited, we're going to be just exploring what the church is, different aspects of what we do in church, why we do them, and the hope is that by the Holy Spirit we would be more excited about the local church than we are currently. So maybe some of us are already really excited, that's great, it can always increase. Some of us might need a fresh revelation of the beauty of the church in all its fullness. And that was going to start today, but then in conversation with Matt and praying, we actually felt it was right to do a sort of more of a vision type talk linked to the building, as you now know, this morning, which still kind of comes under the umbrella of the series on the church, but it's just kind of specifically where we're at as a church right now. So the best summary title I felt God give me was this: Arise and Build. Arise and Build. And to do that, we're going to be focused. I don't really like doing a vision talk without Bible, so we're going to be focusing on Nehemiah chapter 2. If you ever talk about vision, Nehemiah is the obvious place to go, so I'm not being particularly original there. But Nehemiah chapter 2. But however, the parallels between what God's been speaking to me about particularly and thinking about and us with the building are really strong in this passage. So actually, it was an obvious place to go to. So Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 11 to 20. So I'll read it first of all. Just a kind of bit of context for Nehemiah, for those who don't know. Nehemiah was a man, we find out in chapter 1, who was called by God to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, which had been torn down. So Jerusalem was God's holy place, his sort of holy city, if you like, in the Old Testament, that time where the temple was built, the Jewish temple, which was God's people at the time, where God dwelt on earth. So this is a really, really special place. The Israelites have been in captivity in Babylon, and now some of them have gone back, and the temple's kind of, some form of temple has been rebuilt. But Nehemiah hears that the walls of Jerusalem are burnt down, which is a bad thing. And so then we get to Nehemiah going to he asks the permission of the king, who he serves, to go back to Jerusalem, and in chapter 2, he's got back to Jerusalem. So I went to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. Then I arose in the night, I and a few men with me, and I told no one what God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. There was no animal with me, but the one on which I rode. I went out by night by the valley gate to the dragon spring and to the dung gate, and I inspected the walls of Jerusalem that were broken down and its gates that had been destroyed by fire. Then I went to the fountain gate, to the king's pool, but there was no room for the animal that was under me to pass. Then I went up in the night by the valley and inspected the wall, and I turned back and entered by the valley gate and so returned. And the officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing, and I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, and the rest who were to do the work. Then I said to them, "You see the trouble we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins, with its gates burned. Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer suffer derision." And I told them of the hand of my God that had been upon me for goods, and also of the words that the king had spoken to me. And they said, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for the good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite servant and Geshem the Arab heard of it, they jeered us and despised us and said, "What is this thing that you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king?" Then I replied to them, "The God of heaven will make us prosper, and we his servants will arise and build. But you have no portion or right or claim in Jerusalem." We often think the story of Nehemiah and the way I introduced it makes it sound like this is all about one man. It's a story. I mean, it's got his name on the front cover. It's all about Nehemiah, the superhero. He goes and saves Jerusalem single-handedly. But this passage starts introducing us to a different reality, and chapter 3 makes it very clear. We're actually going to be looking at chapter 3 as part of the series on the church in a few weeks' time. But makes it very clear that this wasn't a one-man thing. This was a community together thing. as we'll see and as hopefully came out, because Nehemiah kind of did the initial research, if you like. He went around and he went to Jerusalem. That's that first section we read. It says, I and a few men with me, they went and they inspected the walls. They saw what the problems were. He got a vision from God. But then there came a point in chapter 2, verse 17, which is a very key verse for us today, hence the title, where he goes to the people and he says, "You see the trouble we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gates burned. Come, let us build the walls of Jerusalem." And then in chapter 3, as we'll see in a few weeks' time, this becomes a reality as the people together, like side by side, one person builds this bit, another person builds this bit, another person builds this bit, and side by side, they rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Nehemiah chapter 3 is one of my favorite chapters in the Bible, but on the surface, it's very boring because it's just a list of names of people who build, but there's so much amazing stuff in it. The truth is, it was a community together who caught the vision, who rose up side by side and rebuilt the walls. And this morning, I want us to explore what this means for us in Chester Street right now with this building. It happens to be a building, but it could be anything that God is leading us into at the moment, which is just a building that we're grappling with, we're seeking God on, and we don't want it to be a couple of people, me or Matt or whoever, being the ones who seek God. We want it to be a church together. If this is going to happen, it's going to be the whole church. It's only going to happen if the whole church engages fully with this this initiative. So we've seen the video. On top of the video, here are some facts to give to you about this building. Number one, it's a stupid idea. Number two, we've already got a lot going on as a church. We're in the process of forming a new charity, hopefully just for your information. The week after this, that application will go forward. So maybe, hopefully by January, we'll be launched as a charity. And in January, January the 17th, by the way, is going to be our commissioning service in Durham before we launch out the week after here. So there's a lot going on already. My head is very full. Right now, anyway. So a building's the last thing we need, really. Number three. It's all about inspiring faith. Number three. We don't have the money to buy it. It costs, it's on the market for £160,000. I reckon we can, in conversation with Dennis, who, by the way, has done a lot of behind-the-scenes work on this, not just taking a video, and Matt and others. I reckon we could buy it for £100,000. Don't really have any evidence for that, but I think it's well overpriced. It was last bought for £120,000 2 years ago, and they've done nothing to it. And then maybe we'll need another £100,000 to renovate it, possibly in stages, but we'll need a big chunk of money up front just to get it into an okay state to use. So that's a lot of money. Currently in our Chester Street bank account, which is just sort of set up, we've got £5,000, which is a grant that Regions Beyond, our family of churches, have given us to a church planting grant, which is great. So the way I'm thinking about it, we've got 1/20th, so we need 19 more £5,000. That makes it sound a lot more manageable to me. So that's kind of the negative side of it. But number four, and this is the key, God seems to be speaking about it. Faith comes when God speaks. If God's not speaking, we're not going to do this. And a part of the way we discern whether God is speaking is through the body of his people. We believe in every member ministry, not a few people doing the stuff, but together we're seeking God, we're doing it. Obviously, ultimately, Matt and I as elders need to take the call of how we pursue it. We want to hear, we're sort of taking the temperature of the church on this, if you like, as a discerning, part of the discerning process. Hebrews 11 says this, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen." So we need God in each one of our hearts, or the vast, vast majority of our hearts, to do that, to give faith, which is the conviction of things hoped for, that this conviction, this hope that we have could become a reality. Sorry, the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. That what we see, the vision of how this building could be used and how that area of the town and the wider town, the wider region could be impacted through the work of the Holy Spirit and the gospel of Jesus being proclaimed in that place is astonishing. And if we have faith and if we start seeing potential, then maybe God will move our hearts. And so we've done the Nehemiah 2, 11 to 16 part. We're now up to Nehemiah 2, verse 17, which is what this morning is all about. The big missing element, if you like, is you. Is God speaking to you? And I'm not expecting you to say yes or no today. That's what this month we're kind of giving a month of this of seeking God and praying is all about. But is God speaking to you? If the overall sense we get from the church is a no, then and principally this is going to be found out, as we'll find out at the end, by our wallets or our bank accounts or our whatever else is, which we'll come to, but basically our money. If the overall sense is no, because we have nowhere near enough money, then we can't press forwards to it. But if there is a sense that that God is doing something, there's momentum, there's faith that comes, then we can step forwards. And so to help us with this, with the start of this process, we're just going to journey through verses 17 to 20 and see some of the things in the Nehemiah passage which I think really parallel us and where we're at, and some principles, if you like, for us as we're thinking about this. So if we go to the first slide. Number one, we need to see the need around us. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 17. He says, you see, he's telling the people have seen it, you see the trouble we are in and how Jerusalem lies in ruins. The question for us is, do we see the need around us? Do we see the ruin spiritually, physically, emotionally around us? Because unless we see the need and we start feeling the, not just see it, but start feeling the need, then we're not going to be moved to meet the need and to engage with it. So the need in Nehemiah's case was this city, this, as I said at the beginning, this holy place of God where the temple was, which was in ruins. That means it was defenseless. Attack could easily come. The temple could be destroyed again. God's glory was at stake here. The worship and the praise of God was at stake. I want to say that God's glory in Chester Street, his worship and his praise is at stake here. And it's not all about a building. We may not be called to do this building. That's what I was working out. But this is a bigger principle than just the building that we're focusing on today. Do we see the need? Are we engaging with the need? Are we rolling up our sleeves and getting our hands dirty with the world around us? Because the thing about Nehemiah is he was doing quite okay. Thank you very much. He was a cupbearer to the king. That was a high job. It was a dangerous job. He risked death every day. But he was doing okay. It would have been highly esteemed. He would have been fairly wealthy. He was got a high position in the king's palace, in this foreign palace. He was miles away, I'm not even sure how far, but away from the city of Jerusalem. He didn't have to do anything. And yet God gripped his heart. This vision of God gripped his heart and gave him a burden. In chapter 1, we read how he hears the news and it says he sat down, he wept, and he mourned for days. He felt it. He didn't just say, oh, there's a need out there and someone would meet it. He felt it, he experienced it, and out of this burden came this action. And so for us, if we can't see the need and we don't feel the need, then we'll just settle with the easy option. Chester Street, as all communities, is full of that need. It's broken lives, and there's communities around us who need the transformative power and love of Jesus. We found it, and others need it. Our cry must be, Lord, break my heart for what breaks yours. Give us that burden that you have. Jesus is spoken of as in the Gospels as one who sees the crowds who are harassed and helpless. And it says, without a shepherd, and he has compassion on them. We need that same compassionate heart for the harassed and helpless people around us. The heart of Jesus. In the Gospel of Jesus, we see the great Nehemiah. He is the far greater Nehemiah, isn't he? He's the amazing. He is the amazing one who, enthroned in heaven, sees, but doesn't just see. He feels. He weeps over the need on this earth. And his decision wasn't to stay up in his holy heavenly bubble, but to enter into the mess, to become a baby. That is, I mean, it's not Christmas yet, but we can just be astonished right now in September. It is astonishing that the King of the universe became a baby. He got into the mess. He was born in the messiest place, probably one of the messiest places on earth, amongst animals. And then, not only that, he lived and he got his hands dirty as he lived, and then he died on the cross. As he died on the cross, he took all of the mess, all of the evil, all of the injustice, all of the violence, all of the selfishness, all of the stuff, the messy, broken stuff of this world, he took it on himself, the consequences of it, he took on himself when he died on the cross, so that now the world can receive the power of his kingdom, that is his justice, his wholeness, his goodness, his forgiveness, his mercy, and his new life. It's breaking in right now because of what Jesus did on the cross, because he was willing to get his hands dirty. One day we'll see it fully when he returns. But right now, even right now, it's breaking in. And so like Nehemiah and like Jesus, I guess, we all have a choice. We can either live in our little bubble over here and get on with our life, and it's the easy option really, and maybe do the odd thing here or there to help people out, but really it's centered around us and our bubble, and then when we and the need's over here somewhere. Or we can choose for that bubble to be broken and to spend our lives on getting our hands dirty, meeting with, engaging with those who are lost without Jesus. And I would want to push us towards those who are most, even the most broken, the most hurt, because they're the people Jesus went to in our society. We have that choice. And what I'm saying is not that if we get this building, suddenly the needs will all be met. Actually, if we get the building, that's when the hard work starts. So getting the money is probably the relatively easy part. When we actually get it, then is when we've got a building in the middle of this area that needs Jesus and is desperate, and then we need that. So it's kind of, this isn't a short-term thing. This is a long-term, building relationships, engaging with the community, sticking it out, and seeing what Jesus wants to do. The vision that has gripped our hearts is a space where the community is engaged, which is a place of refuge, of hope, of justice, of joy, and of Jesus. I could think of many more words, but they're the ones that came to my mind. That's not our vision statement, don't get me wrong. That will come in January. But there's some of the things that we want to see, and we think a physical presence. We believe God stirs a physical presence in that place will help us to be this physical refuge, not just people who come in and go out and come in and go out the whole time. And phase one, as I said, a break into phases. Phase one is to acquire the building. So that was the longest one, you please know, but seeing the need around us. Secondly, from this passage, recognize the leading of God. Okay, this one's actually also quite long. The longest two at the beginning. Chapter 2, verse 18 says this, "And I told them of the hand of my God that had been upon me for good." So he then started sharing testimony of how God had been leading and speaking and directing him, particularly with the thing with the king, which is amazing, in the chapter before. And so that there was faith built as the testimony comes. As we share testimony of God's leading, faith starts coming. And so what we're going to do now is we're going to go through a number of words that God has spoken to us, some of which will be on the screen and I'll read, one of which will be live and one will be on a video, how God's led us. So first, there's two key words. By the way, just so you know, Tom Murray and Tom Widdowson have done a great job of collecting prophetic words over the last 3 years. So we probably need updating, but we've got a record on a Word document of all these words, which is amazing. So first one, 31st of January 2017 from Sam Douthwaite, if you could flick, who's preached here a couple of times, said this. He emailed me just after he'd been here. "I felt the Lord wanted me to pray for you to be a risk-taking church that pushes boundaries, pushing beyond the expression of church that you've experienced before. You may feel that stepping out and planting was a big step of faith. One could say a risk. But the Lord is speaking about more than the risk of planting out. He is committed to stretch you further outside the comfort zone. I believe reaching out to the poor is one dimension of where the Lord desires to take you to take risks. My sense is that the Lord will lead you to a work with the poor." And by that, not everyone likes that word, but you understand what I mean. The marginalized, the needy, the broken in our society. We're all poor in different ways. But you're meant to embrace it, and he will bring forth fruit as you lean on him and trust him to equip you in the process. So that's kind of like, if you like, a general, specific things in there, but a general thing about reaching out to the most needy, taking risks. If we go on to the next one, which kind of parallels this, Elaine Campbell, Dave and Elaine, David planted the church in Durham in 1980. They come back every 6 months or so. She said this at a prayer meeting, "Psalm 146, particularly verse 8, we won't read it now, but feel free to note it down, is relevant for Chester Street now. The image of lifting up those who are bowed down, like helping an old person stand upright, is one we need to press into and seek after. This is what outreach in this town should look like. We are to be there for others, especially the poor and the hurting. We know that the Lord does it all, and that it is his work, but he allows us to be co-laborers with him." So this is just like a snapshot. So there's two sort of words about the work with the poor generally. Can we get the video? Is that going to be possible to do? While Andy gets the video, if Joy, could you come up? Is that all right? There's now two kind of more specific words about, more specific words about this area of the town, the avenues kind of area. So one's from Joy, one's from Hannah via video, and one's from someone else. So Joy, Mike, somewhere. just for God. We're seeking to just see where he's leading, and it's not, I haven't experienced an audible voice, but he leads in different ways. So next thing is Hannah, who unfortunately is doing creche and didn't want to produce a video, but she said she was willing to do it. So this is a great video on the green, actually.
So here I am standing on the green in the avenues in Chesterley Street. Some of you might recognise it from the fun days that we've had here in the previous 3 years. In 2001, Adam and I felt God call us to come and live in Chesterley Street after we got married, even though we'd never been here before. We actually bought our first house in this street up here. And then in 2006, our first child, Isaac, came along. And Isaac didn't sleep, so I used to walk around all these streets for hours with him in his pram, just praying about this vision that we had for a church here in Chesterley Street, and just saying to God, you know, how is this going to happen? Like, what is the purpose of us being here? And I really used to feel a strong sense of God saying, you just need to leave it up to me, but I'm going to bring church to this green in Chesterley Street. And that used to blow my mind a bit. And then obviously there were quite a few years where nothing seemed to happen, and then Emmanuel in Chesterley Street started. And I remember 3 years of fun days on this green. And there was a banner in the middle of the green that just stood there saying Emmanuel Church, Chesterley Street, and just think, wow, God, you've brought church to this green here in Chesterley Street, just as you promised longer than 10 years ago. And after the first fun day, I just stood by that banner and I was just praising God and saying thank you for the fulfillment of that word. And he said, this is only the start of it. So watch this space, people, because there's more to come.
So that was cool. I didn't know she was going to do it on location. The wind obviously adds a bit of extra excitement, but we could hear it still, so that's good. And then the final one on this sort of thing about the avenues was from Abby Flavelle, who our last church weekend away, we had this couple, John and Abby, and it was just before we were about to start, she didn't know this, but we were about to start the living room, which we did for a number of months in Bullion Hall in this area. And without knowing that, she said this. In fact, there's lost sheep here as well. I didn't realise that. We're a church family, she says, who are called to go get lost sheep. We need to be trusting in God for everything in our church. He has faith journeys, faith is quite key, faith journeys in store for us that will grow our faith in him. We have been set apart from the main body of Emmanuel for a specific purpose. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, 4-9 is true for us, that we lack no gift. We're a church of good, strong, and stable people, a very stable unit. The people of Chesterley Street need the stability and strength that we bring. He will begin to break us for the people of the town, and he's going to stir us for adoption for a particular estate, a particular place of deprivation, or even particular families. We're going to begin to see need and how we can meet it. We must not be overwhelmed by the need. We must keep looking at him and trusting that he is enough, that with him it is possible to meet the needs of the community and of the lost. We must drop everything and be willing to be broken for those for whom his heart breaks, the families in crisis, for the addicted, for the poverty-stricken. We have things that are too precious to keep in the church: stable families, strong fathers, and great parenting. We need to be broken for Jesus' heart for the lost sheep. Every time I read it, it's like, oh, I don't know about anyone else, but they've all been words from God, but that was like, there's some which are like 100%, you know it's a word from God, because you sense the Holy Spirit, I do anyway, as it's being read. And at the time, God started doing some fairly powerful things in a few of us who were there. And then a couple of things about this, about a building kind of more recently, if you like, in terms of me and what's got. About a year ago, I really felt God starting to challenge me to start praying for a building rather than just, because I've always thought, I still do. And on one level, on a human level, we're still very small and we're still very early and the building's kind of maybe too soon to start thinking about buildings. But I just really felt God challenged to actually ask me. You know, you need to ask. If you don't ask, you don't get. And start asking. And obviously there's been a few false starts with buildings, a couple of things we pursued and haven't come to anything in different ways. But that's not the point. The point is God, I think, is asking us to be proactive, and this is part of being proactive. And he will open up the right thing. At a similar time as that, John, I can't use that word, but John Cairns mentioned to me that he felt this physical building here at Parkview was restricting in some way, I think, what God wanted to do spiritually. I think that's close enough. You may or may not remember it, John, but or both of you, but you said it. there was something linked to this building that was hindrance. And then we had a building survey done in July on this building, And as that was being done, I was having quite strong doubts because this is the whole journey so far has been a constant battle of faith versus fear, which I think is understandable. And 1 Chronicles, I was reading my reading for that day, and it was 1 Chronicles 22. This is the day the building survey is being done. I was having doubts, and I read this. Now, my son, the Lord be with you, so that you may succeed in building the house of the Lord your God, as he has spoken concerning you. Only may the Lord grant you discretion and understanding. Then you will prosper if you're careful to observe my statutes. Be strong and courageous. Fear not. Do not be dismayed. With great pains, I have provided for the house of the Lord 100,000 talents of gold, 1,000,000 talents of silver. That sounds like a lot. And bronze and iron beyond weighing. For there is so much of it. Timber and stone too. I have provided. To these you must add. You must have an abundance. You have an abundance of workmen and women. That's around here. Stone cutters, masons, carpenters, and all kinds of craftsmen. Okay, you may not be those gifts. You might have some of those. But other gifts and other finances. Without number, skilled in working. Gold, silver, bronze, and iron. Arise and work. The Lord be with you. David also commanded all of the leaders of Israel, and this is all of you, I believe, to help Solomon his son, saying, is not the Lord your God with you? And has he not given you peace on every side? For he has delivered the inhabitants of the land into my hand, and the land is subdued before the Lord and his people. Now set your mind and your heart to seek the Lord your God. Arise and build the sanctuary. It's like, whoa. I mean, I don't know if there is such a thing as coincidence, really. So, that was just like, for me, that was incredibly powerful. And I'm kind of, alongside the other stuff, I'm living off the good of it now as we move forwards. So that's the second one. Okay, and the last three are a lot quicker. So rise up united, number 3. Verse 18. He says, come let us arise. What do they say? Let us rise up and build. So he says it, and then there's a response. And this is kind of like, again, where the ball's in your court. Nehemiah knew that the people needed to be together. They needed to be united. If this was ever, this was a big adventure they were going on. This wasn't a small thing, rebuilding these walls. And then unity is essential to any mighty work of God, and we need to be united. If this is going to come about, we need to be together. We need to stand side by side. We need to all play our part. It will mean all sorts of things. What does it mean to rise up united? It means all sorts of things, but just on the surface right now, just as it will mean huge sacrifice in terms of time and money for us. I don't want to kind of pretend this is going to be an easy thing or a kind of thing. It's going to require a lot. 100,000 between us is a lot. I honestly believe, like that passage in Chronicles said, if this is God's thing, then we have the resources among us. Okay, someone might give us outside the church a big gift too, we'll take that. But we have the resources among us. I don't want to go looking outside principally. I want to principally focus on what we have here because, if the vision's there, then everything else will come, I believe. Number 4, prepare ourselves. Verse 18 again goes on to say, so they strengthen their hands for the good work. No idea what that means, really, but it sounds like a good thing. maybe they did their press-ups. I don't know. But there might be some physical preparation. It might mean physically. But I think probably it means principally spiritually. So Nehemiah had already spent loads of time praying and fasting. Maybe now they got praying and fasting a little bit. They probably did. I would have thought Nehemiah would have encouraged that. They got to the point, I think, here where they realized if this was going to happen, then it wasn't their work but God's work that was going to make it succeed. There's a little quote I came across. When we work, we work. When we pray, God works. So slightly simplistic, but the point's there. And we need to pray. I think principally preparing ourselves right now means praying, fasting, seeking the Lord. That 1 Chronicles passage ended by saying the command was to seek the Lord with all your hearts. Seek the Lord with all your hearts. Right now, I'm urging us, please, seek the Lord with all of your hearts. Fast, if you're able to, in some form, however you find that something you can do. But set your mind and heart to seek the Lord. A week on Wednesday is our next engine room. That's going to be given over to praying about this and seeking God. So please put it in your diaries. Please, if you're able, if you're a couple of young children, if you're able to get a babysitter, I realise there's a limited number of babysitters because some of them are in the church and will be there. But if you're able to get a babysitter from outside the church, please do come along and make it a priority. We're Details will be given next Sunday, but we'll probably have the first section in the car park outside the building to pray there. Another question, how can you engage your whole family on this journey as we're praying and seeking the Lord? Don't just think it's good to parents. You can talk to your children about it, say, you know, what do you think? Or their age, I guess, to a degree. But even if they're really young, you can at least say, this is something we're praying about. Can you pray with us? And the other question, these last two were from Claire, as I sought her advice, so they're the best bits, I think. engage your family in the journey. And secondly, what fears do we have? Because, like me, you might have some fears if we're going to go ahead with this. Actually, write them down. You'll notice this from Claire because she writes a lot. Write them down. Write a letter, like a letter to God or whatever, so that you can really get those things out on paper and really pray about them. All right, strengthen your hands. Number five, and finally, live by faith and not by sight. Verses 19 and 20, these Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem came and jeered at the people. What did they say? What is this thing that you are doing? That's a lie Satan loves to whisper. That's what I'm hearing all the time at the moment. What is this thing you are doing? Because it, as I said at the beginning, it is a stupid, crazy idea. What is this thing you are doing? And the reality is, we can live in that. What is this thing you are doing? This is kind of like the human, opposition, or kind of spiritually, kind of living in the opposition, in the fear that the opposition Satan likes to bring us. Or we can live by faith, because the response was, the God of heaven will make us prosper, and we, his servants, will arise and build. If fear overcomes faith, then it's probably not from God. But if faith, as we're seeking God, starts to overcome the fear, then maybe this is from God. And maybe we can get to a place where we say, we will arise and build, and we will prosper because God is in this. Similarly, in 1 Chronicles 22, be strong and courageous. Fear not. Do not be dismayed. Then it lists all the stuff that he's provided. And then verse 18, is not the Lord your God with you? If this is God's purpose, which is what we're seeking to discern, this really, genuinely isn't a faith to come believe. We need to know what's with the church is on board. But if this is God's purpose, then the land is already subdued before us. And so we can have faith, because if it's God's purpose, he will make it happen. This week has been a really challenging week for me personally, because I've kind of been living in this tension of, I didn't really want to do this talk, Matt made me. I was going to put it off another couple of weeks, but I think it was right to do it right now. And because I've been living in this tension, as soon as it becomes public now, like, and we're saying this, right, church, then it's suddenly become a lot more real. When it's in my head or in our heads and we're just talking about it behind the scenes, it's real and it's out there. And the faith fear challenge is difficult. With a group of people this week we were meeting with, a passage that came out twice was this, this is the last passage, and a few practicalities, and we will end with a song. It's 2 Kings 6, where's that time when the armies are around Elisha and his servant, and the servant says, alas, my master, what shall we do? And he said, do not be afraid, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Then Elisha prayed and said, O Lord, please open his eyes that he may see. So the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. And my prayer above all else is, Lord, open our eyes that we will see the need, but also see the authority and the power and the privilege that we have and the resources that we have as we dig into him, and it will happen. And Lord, would you open our eyes that we will see? That's our cry. Even your heart now, just engage with God. I'm going to go into practicalities, but engage with God as I'm talking about practicalities. In practice, I've mentioned these already, but just a summary. Prayer and seeking God is the key. Prayer, seek God. Our next engine room, please try to come if you can. Secondly, talk to me and or Matt. If you have concerns, if you have excitement, I'd love to hear either, because we want to hear what's going, what you're sensing. If you just have any words from God or anything at all, please talk to us. And thirdly, and finally, money. At the end of the day, I don't particularly like talking about money, but we need money if this is going to happen. Like, we need to buy it, and you need money to buy it. We're not going to be able to get a mortgage because we're not even a charity yet, and we'll be too new when we are set up to get a mortgage. So over these next few months, over September, we're giving this as a month of basically seeing what we as a church are able to give into this sacrificially. Through our willingness to give extravagantly or not, we'll gauge the temperature of the church. It needs to be us together, building the wall side by side, not one or two people doing the work. So probably next Sunday, I'm not here next Sunday, but they'll still be available. We'll have some sort of pledge form available, just so we can discern, because I can't meet with all of you. I'm happy to meet with anyone who wants to meet with, and I might ask to meet with some of you if I feel led by God. But yeah, just so that you can say, this is what we feel we're able to give over this next season. Yeah, because it's going to be painful. Does anyone? Well, maybe it's just me, but I find giving money quite painful. and it's going to be painful because it will mean us sacrificing things that we might have had. Some of us might have money set aside for something, and we're saying, actually, this could now go to this, and that thing I won't do, or I won't change my house in that way that was going to change it, and I'm saving up for that, or whatever. That we might have savings, we have to say, actually, I'm going to dig deep into those savings, I'm going to put it into this. You know, there are, without wanting to be, like, there's a parable Jesus tells about that rich young fool who stores up in barns, and then his life's taken from him. And if this is from God, and you feel it's a kingdom thing, and you sense it's God, then I would say this is a great thing to put money into and not store up in barns. Some of us might say we have really, really little money, maybe no money at all. We have absolutely no savings anywhere. And in which case, I want to say you can still engage with this, because Jesus commended even the widow who just gave her two pennies. And everything, you know, God multiplies what we give anyways. Everything counts. It's the heart that is the key. What is sacrifice for you in your place? Some of us might not have savings, but we might own a house. And there is the ability for some of us potentially to remortgage our house, to get equity, to give into this as well. That, of course, will mean you have a longer mortgage or you have higher repayments, but that's, again, part of the call potentially. This isn't me saying you must do this, this, and this. This is me just putting thoughts out in your mind and allowing God to... You need to do it with God, but things like that are going to have to happen if we're going to get anywhere near £100,000 among us. Would you agree? So that's my sales pitch for money.